This is a game, after all.
Dan, forget the word game.
Stacy sat up.
For you, Barleona is a way of earning your living and providing for your family. You have a clan that earns you a stable income. What its owner's reputation is means a lot.
It's not an issue. Once they install the capsule, I'll make you the clan head. Meanwhile, I'll deal with Guernica and Carmandant. Something tells me that if I get to the bottom of that whole affair, either I'll get it in the back of the neck, which is where I am now anyway, or I'll end up with some exceptional bonuses. I'll transfer the clan over to you tomorrow.
The hell with that! You're not making a clan head out of me, smirked Stacy. I'm with you. Do you really think that you and Plinto will get all the goodies? Like hell!
Hey, that's my catchphrase.
Darling Danny, you better get used to it. From now on, we are one in sickness and in health. So, I won't be letting you go on your own. Don't even count on it. Make Flyta the head.
Who? I almost started from surprise.
Flyta the Decembrist, a.k.a. Julia Decembro? I'll draft the contract. Don't worry.
Stacy paused, gauging my reaction, and then laughed.
I found out everything there is to find out about that girl. Don't worry. She's studying to be an economist, has a boyfriend. That is, had a boyfriend. Now she's free and spends all her time in Barleona getting used to her new race. It's looking like the corporation has decided to turn her into a new object of reverence by including her in a bunch of new scenarios. She's not afraid of responsibility, despite her capricious attitude, and she's intelligent and knows how to behave responsibly. She'll be a perfect clan head, believe me. Do you want me to speak to her myself?
I replied with eloquent astonishment, staring at Stacy's hazel eyes. In the twilight, they were so dark that I couldn't even see their whites. Two deep, dark wells capable of consuming the mind of anyone who crossed her path. In the given instance, me.
It's agreed, then,
Stacy smiled, adding a twinkle to her dark eyes.
Tomorrow I'll go see Guernica and ask to join his team. He let Plinto in, after all.
Plinto lost all of his reputation, I tried to object, but Stacy was unshakable.
Darling, I remember the Dark Forest. I remember what you did and what you got as a reward when it was all over. I find it hard to believe that the corporation will really strip you of everything you've attained, and I want to be among those who will gain the bonuses, so I'm with you. Are there any questions? Objections? No? Very good. Come over here.
The technicians came early in the morning. Corporate professionalism kept them from saying out loud what was evident enough on their faces, and no doubt, "bunch of clumsy apes," was among the kinder of their thoughts. My capsule was moved to the wall. The networking cables were tucked neatly away into said wall, and we signed another heap of documentation about our liabilities with the equipment. After we'd gotten rid of our glum guests, but before going to see Guernica, I opened my mail. From Cafe Alventa Administration to Daniel Mayen. Daniel, attached, please find the results from one of your tournament members. Payment has been made. We look forward to working with you in the future. Kind regards, Cafe Alventa.
Come here, Stacy, I smiled, seeing the dossier on a Marina Corvus aged 31. I had made a slight mistake.
Marina wasn't overweight.
To the opposite. She was attractive, with pretty blue eyes, a turned-up nose, and spiraling chestnut hair. The only problem was that this woman bore no resemblance whatsoever to the Marina I had encountered at the seminar. This is the Marina who is now a little heap of ash. I began to explain the files I'd received to Stacy. And look, the actual video of the seminar has been deleted. It doesn't exist. Even though this data is kept for 3 years, someone with access to serious resources managed to delete it. However, as we both know, Kat was at the same retraining session as me. She had a video of her own, which is, voila! Stacykins, I present to you the Marina that framed me and sent me to prison. Now, tell me, darling, do you still think I'm crazy? What the? Stacy whispered in shock, shut her eyes, and cursed. I was right like never before. On the video, sitting beside me and dutifully writing down the citation for yet another law, was none other than Roxanne Vecchi. We need to go see Hellfire, Stacy growled, whispered through her teeth a minute later. Can you set it up? Let's try it, I nodded, and dialed the corporate number. Put me in touch with Alex Herman. What can I say? Alex rubbed his chin, looking sadly at the wall. It took me 10 minutes to get through 100 managers and assistant vice presidents to Alex, and he, hearing my conclusions, decided to come visit us at home right away. Looking at the documents that I had by now received from all 5 of my mercenaries, Alex's face went grim. Whenever it seems that everything is clear and unambiguous, Mayan rides in and turns everything upside down. Where'd you pick up this talent? Or is it something you have to be born with? Without waiting for his answer, Alex went on. First of all, not a word about your suspicions to anyone. That's right, Mayan, suspicions. Until you have proof of the opposite, Roxanne is innocent. We'll talk to Alexander. We'll take the documents and... Damn! Why do you need to see Do Not Panic? To make sure that... I began, but Alex cut me off. Again, this case is now in our jurisdiction. Meeting Do Not Panic or Hellfire might hurt the investigation. If you're right and Marie... Roxanne, I mean, is really alive, then seeing Do Not Panic can only hurt. She's sure to be following anything around these people. I can't let you do that. Klutzer. Unexpectedly, even to myself, I called Alex by his Barleona name, causing him to start as if he'd seen, or in this case heard, a ghost. I need to talk to Do Not Panic. I have no idea why, but I need to. Set it up. Please. Once again, a silence descended on our apartment. Only now, 3 people were involved. And 2 of them were staring at me and thinking about something feverishly. Finally, Alex sighed deeply and slowly, as if under great stress, and said, "Tomorrow you can see Do Not Panic." Daniel, you know, I spent a long time studying the code that went into your shamanic premonition. And, well, it didn't exist. Your premonition is simply your own personal premonition. A sixth sense. A third eye. Call it what you want. I'll arrange the meeting, but I insist that you don't mention Roxanne to anyone. This is very important. Attention, everyone. Everyone. Everyone! The first Kalragan Interclan Tournament begins today. Face the best players of Barleona. In addition to the three empires, that's right, you heard correctly, three, representatives of all of Barleona's continents will take part in the tournament as invited guests. Become the best among the best.
The notification announcing the launch of the event filled the space before my eyes and refused to be swiped aside. I had to read it in its entirety. As soon as the system made sure that I had fully read it, the notification dissolved like fog. I looked around and couldn't help but smirk. The library had been fully restored. There was no sign that I had recently destroyed it by creating the Carmadon chess set.
Oh, has the doom of all life decided to wake up from his nap?
Garanika's wry voice sounded beside me.
Took you a good while to come to.
I see the library's already been repaired. I ignored Garanika's barb, examining the nearest shelves. Was it difficult?
The spirit of Barleona has gifted you three teleportations,
Garanika went on. This conversation was beginning to remind me of an exchange between two deaf people. Everyone's doing the talking, but no one's listening.
You will be sent to Altamida immediately, from there to Pryke, and then back. You know, Mayan, I'm curious what you did to attract such attention. Did you sell your soul?
Are you asking why all the empires have it in for me? I decided to play his game, but to my surprise, Garanika replied,
Not all of them. Only Cartus and Malabar. Shadow couldn't give a damn what threat you pose to the pillars of this world.
I looked at Garanika with puzzlement, causing him to burst out in laughter.
You have no idea what I'm talking about, do you? If you get into the tomb, you'll discover a lot of unnecessary information. Information that the Emperor and the Dark Lord would prefer to keep secret. That's why every free citizen has been given the single quest of stopping you from reaching that secret. They're using them like a flock of sheep that mills in front of the gates and doesn't let anyone into the village. Although, they're using them about the only way you can use free citizens. Brainless sheep.
Those sheep stole your scepter. I reminded Garanika of one of the episodes in our mutual past. It's never pleasant when an NPC insults players.
And forced me to make concessions,
he agreed, without batting an eyelid.
You can add that the same sheep made me mortal by piercing me with the horn of the unicorn. But that's in the past. You and I inhabit the present, in which you pose a mortal threat to the entire world order. Were it up to me, I'd happily help you, but, well, it's not allowed. The Emperor and the Dark Lord have made a deal with Barleona itself, and Barleona accepted their terms.
Why? I asked, baffled. What'll happen if I get into the tomb?
Let's put it this way. There won't be much good from it,
a hoarse voice said from behind me. I turned around. A man and an orc. An old man and an old green orc. Wrapped in torn, tattered, and soiled gray capes,
the kind that the homeless sometimes resort to. They looked utterly out of place even in the Spartan decor of Guernica's palace. I found myself looking at two pairs of white eyes that had faded with time, causing me to feel a bit awkward and forcing me to read the properties of the new arrivals. It's nice to know who I'm dealing with.
Darius, level 1,000 human. Critchett, level 1,000 orc.
I shook my head in bafflement, trying to dispel my confusion. This simply couldn't be. Had Barleona broken down? I checked Guernica's properties just in case.
Guernica, level 1,000 human, Lord of Shadow, Shadow Harbinger, Narlak City Guardian.
No, everything seemed okay.
Who the hell are these two, then? There's a dozen or two creatures in all of Barleona who are at level 1,000. Emperors, gods, and their analogs, such as the Supreme Spirits and, key NPCs like Renox.
And that was all. There's not supposed to be any Dariuses or Critchets on this list.
The tomb is a secondary matter,
Darius went on, arranging himself in a chair with a creak. The NPC's hands trembled noticeably as he placed his walking stick aside. I looked over at the orc and frowned. Only now did I notice that he, too, was on his last legs. They trembled, and his face periodically twisted in a grimace. The orc was suffering, but he remained standing. He was supporting himself with his crutch, but he stood as if wishing to demonstrate that he had strength enough, that he was stronger than the human. Damn! These old fogies are about to fall apart to pieces without even telling me anything interesting. On a whim, I grabbed a chair and, taking several steps, offered it to the orc. He sat down in it with an evident sigh of relief and gave me a grateful look. It took but a moment, but it was enough to understand that I had done a great favor for him.
"Let me introduce you, Mayan." Guernica stepped between the old men. "The old tired orc is Critchett. The old tired human is Darius. Be sure to love and honor them. They have several questions for you."
The old men wanted to know the story of late that I had learned in the cave, especially as it concerned the Alabaster Throne. Surprisingly, the two NPCs began inquiring after the method of blocking the shadows in the presence of the Lord of Shadow himself. Deciding that this was probably just another puzzle that the devs had cooked up for players who'd set upon the path of shadow, I related everything I managed to learn in the cave without omitting a single detail.
"In that case, we must assume that the desert appeared because Commandant took the crystal,"
Darius summarized enigmatically and, seeing the puzzlement on my face, explained,
"Initially, the Creator himself blocked the effect of the throne. After that, the crystal. Once Commandant removed the Urgrice, it was only the power granted to Late that blocked the throne's effects from afflicting Barleona. And yet, that wasn't enough. And as a result, an enormous lifeless desert formed around the cave where you killed the phantoms. Everything is dead in it."
"This may be a dumb question, but who are you guys, anyway?" I decided to start figuring things out. "Why are you interested in the throne, and why don't you ask its owner about it? I mean, he's standing right here, grinning like an idiot. I bet he knows more than me about what's going on."
"Who we are, what we are, How we are,
the orc muttered to himself.
We already told you. We're old, tired creatures who have their own particular goals. As for you, it's time for you to go to Altamida. You're due for an opening ceremony of a tournament.
The orc flourished his hand, and I suddenly found myself in midair. Or rather, the floor receded from me in a whimsical way without me feeling any motion at all. If I shut my eyes, I'd imagine myself still standing on it. But if I open them, oh, the horror! The old man mimicked his partner, and a brilliant emerald portal appeared right before me. What the hell is this, then? That's not supposed to happen in Barleona. Portals are either blue, white, or, in really extreme and typically sinister situations, red. But certainly never green. The orc flourished his hand again, and the invisible plane that I had been standing on vanished. I went flying into the portal like an Olympic diver, graceful, without a splash, and with a fancy pirouette in mid-flight. I'd give myself a 9.9 for that one without a second thought.
"Master, they're down again!"
Viltrius squeaked plaintively, coddling a catatonic hobgoblin in his arms. The portal spit me out right in Altamita's main hall, wiping out the hobgoblins in the process. Neither Guernica nor his geriatric couple had any respect, or, for that matter, concern, for my castle's teleportation defense.
Viltrius, you have one day to come up with an effective method of blocking unwanted guests from teleporting into our castle, I seethed at the cringing majordomo. If you have to buy something more powerful than hobgoblins, then buy it. If you have to level up the hobgoblins, level them up. If you need to make a deal with the guardian, then make it. I'm tired of whoever waltzing into my castle whenever they feel like it. Or do I need to find another majordomo who will be able to solve this problem? Despite his generally green tint, Viltrius turned as white as chalk, squealed that he would resolve the problem this very instant, and then vanished. I collapsed in my rocking throne and cursed for good measure. I don't know what came over me. Going off on an NPC who served me truly and sincerely was stupid and wrong, but the emotions roiling within me demanded some release. I'm not made of stone, finally. I have an utter mess on my hands, back in reality, while here in Barleona, the devs have come up with an entirely different mess in which I'm enemy number one. On top of it all, Stacy is pregnant, and I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. Arg!
Man, it's such a pleasure to encounter you in the castle!
Spiteful Noom barreled into the main hall.
I'm finished. When are we going to test it?
You're finished with what? I didn't understand what was going on at first, still in my misanthropic rut.
What do you mean?
Noom looked at me with unvarnished surprise, shock, even.
The airship! You came by to look at it yourself. I told you that I'd manage it in a week. Well, it only took a few days, after all. Check it out. I'm like your very own mad scientist. To get the power unit to work, you need 40 chunks of azurcite, which is as volatile as my wife during pregnancy. The chance of making it is 1 in 500, and it burns through resources so fast that your goblin started looking at me funny. And then, bam! A few tweaks here and there, an adjustment to the alchemical processes, and I got all the azurcite I needed. Enough sitting around. Let's go test this baby.
Reflexively, I opened the Harbinger's blink input box and entered the workshop's coordinates. Who'd imagine actually walking there? Yet Barleona had a surprise for me. The blink didn't happen.
Due to the burden of the creator scenario, you are unable to use your blink ability.
Come on, man! What are you just sitting there for?
Noom refused to leave me alone, literally pulling me out of my chair.
You're not allowed to teleport! Stop molesting the teleportation system! No means no! It's you and your feet, mon ami, so up and at 'em!
As we emerged into an open area, I turned into my dragon form and flapped my wings several times. Surprise number two. I can't fly either. Unwilling to give up, I asked Noom to summon a griffin, clambered onto its back, and encountered surprise number three. The bird squeaked, thrashed its wings, but couldn't get off the ground even a centimeter.
Are you done?
To my surprise, Noom waited out my experiments stoically.
Didn't you read? You're enemy number one and all that. You're not allowed to fly.
Then Noom smiled maniacally and added,
At least, not the way everyone else flies.
I had nothing left to do but follow the gnome, since he didn't bother explaining the thought behind his grin.
With a mere, You'll see for yourself.
Noom shuffled ahead of me to the workshop, managing to stop on his way next to empty niches, tisk his tongue, and shake his head.
I can see that there's work upon work here, Noom said, stopping beside yet another empty nave, and then turned to me and asked, When are you going to busy yourself with the castle?
Level 26 was impressive last year. Phoenix, as I hear it, is already almost at level 30.
We should bomb them. I already came up with bombs. I don't have a lot at the moment, but we all know that the recipe is the most important bit.
Noom, sometimes I'm afraid to imagine what goes on in your mind, I replied honestly. 100 interconnected sentences that arrange themselves into perfect fractal. If you ignore all the everyday dross,
the gnome replied in a huff.
I really have to explain everything to you. No, but okay, that'll come later. There's no time right now. Come on, I'm gonna show you my little bird. Don't you need a way to move around Barleona?
By the time we reached the workshop, neither one of us was saying anything. The gnome's last phrase had piqued my curiosity to such a degree that I decided not to tempt fate by irritating the inventor with further talk. What if he gets upset and refuses to show me the...
Ta-da!
Noom yelled triumphantly, throwing open the workshop's enormous doors.
Love and cherish her. Noom's valor. A giant airborne squid dolphin, or GAS for short. I came up with it myself,
Noom added with pride. At his word, the succubi yanked off an enormous white sheet revealing the airship. No, not an airship. An airborne monster. When I had last seen the ship, she had been concealed by trussing, and it had been difficult to assess the magnitude of Noom's valor, or folly, or whatever. Now, however, I was staring with shock at an enormous steel octopus, unsure of whether I should be happy or not. The octopus's body consisted of a 3-deck round construction that had 10 tentacles attached over it like a steel cupola. Similar tentacles were protruding from the ship's side, giving her the resemblance of a squid dolphin. And yet the similarity ended there. I should tell Noom to change his name to Frankenstein. "Does it fly, at least?" I managed, approaching closer.
"Come on, now!"
Noom was about to get upset again, but thought better of it and suggested I climb aboard.
"Hang on, you'll see."
The time had come for me to test Barleona's sensitivity. This wasn't technically a means of transportation. It was a part of Barleona that had been torn up into the sky, and therefore it shouldn't be blocked from flying with me on board. I climbed aboard up a spiral staircase. According to Noom, all players with access would fly in on griffins or teleport in, while the staircase was for my use exclusively, so that I wouldn't forget my roots. Still not understanding what Noom meant by that, I clambered onto the ship. The diameter of the central circle was so long that I even glanced over at the doors. To my trained eye, we wouldn't fit. "Noom, don't you think the entrance is too tight?" I asked the gnome, who had stuck some odd-looking goggles on his face.
"Entrance?"
He furrowed his brow and then broke into a smile.
"Who needs an entrance? This baby flies wherever she likes."
"Your castle has been damaged."
Just in case I hadn't noticed that Noom had just ripped open a giant hole in the workshop ceiling, the system reminded me that any game action is monitored and evaluated accordingly. In this case, by means of finances, since the imperial stone that is required to repair buildings costs an arm and a leg. The walls and roof collapsed inward, crushing various equipment beneath the rubble, but the ship crawled out of this conflagration unharmed. The upraised tentacles worked as conduits for a force field that protected the gas. We rose slowly, and through my porthole I managed to spy Viltrius, aghast and stunned, reckoning up the cost of repairs, yet the goblin's plight soon receded to the back of my mind. I felt triumph. I had managed to fly, against all odds.
"You're not allowed to fly, teleport, or use flying transports," explained Noom. "But the gas isn't a flying transport. It's an ordinary marine vessel that... Ah, look! We have guests!"
100 griffins arose into the air, surrounding us from all sides. Since we were above the castle, the players couldn't get very close and arranged themselves around Altamita's perimeter. A moment later, the first lightning bolt came flying at our gas. Then another, and a few moments later we found ourselves in the center of a Tesla coil that was being set off by hundreds of people at once.
"The hell with a lot of them!"
Noom's grimace dissolved when he saw the outcome of the attacks. The ship, we, the players inside of it, still couldn't be attacked directly, remained unharmed. The force field worked as intended.
"My turn."
Noom rubbed his hands and pressed something on the virtual control panel. Portholes opened up all around the ship's perimeter, unveiling a thicket of ballistae. I frowned. Instead of ordinary ammunition like arrows or pikes, the ballistae were loaded with ordinary nets. How would that defeat this mass of enemies?
"We can't hurt the players, right?"
The gnome smiled and waited for my puzzled nod. Went on.
"There. So we will use the tried and true method. On the count of 3, 2, 1, fire!"
The gas shuddered noticeably. I ran up to the railing and watched, entranced, as the broadside of nets hurled untroubled through the lightning bolts, which only scorched them a little. A few of the players thought of getting out of the trajectory of the cloud flying from our ship, darting aside, but the nets were flying too quickly, and there were way too many of the players around us anyway. Hovering in place and pouring lightning on a motionless target is one thing. Dodging a bunch of flying nets is something else entirely. We didn't damage the players. That was forbidden. But like the gas, the griffins were game objects that could be interacted with. The nets tangled up the mount's wings, causing them to plummet to the ground. And since Barleona has a relatively realistic physics engine, an uncontrolled fall to the ground from 100 meters up, again, a few of the players thought of casting bubbles and save themselves from respawning, but the majority of those who had surrounded the gas were sent to take a break out in reality owing to a fatal lack of wits. Well, who asked them to attack me anyway? Again? Noom yelled into a device that looked like a loudhailer. The dozen of griffins that had managed to avoid the nets and remained circling around our ship put some distance between us and them. Bring her down, I decided, reading the notifications. Several clans were complaining that I had destroyed their players and equipment. Did they really think that I was about to compensate them? Noom, I need a manual for how to fly this ship. Here. The gnome handed me a pair of odd goggles, similar to the ones he was already wearing. There's no manual, but you'll figure it out. Ah, look, the tournament's getting started over there. Oh, goddamn, I blurted out when I realized the scale of the tragedy. Until this moment, I felt fairly ambivalently about the tournament, shelling out the dough and trying to stay out of the event's overall organization. Now that the tournament had begun, however, I was shocked at its scale. A sea of people had taken up residence outside of Ultimeda. The tent city alone, with its sharp points, receded far into the horizon. Several auxiliary buildings had been erected near the castle, among which I could only identify the arena and the multicolored merchants' tents mixed with small squares, and all of it roiled with people. The obstacle course, Noom indicated one of the facilities filled with players. That's where the opening ceremony will be held today. I looked in the indicated direction and started back from the railing. Noom hadn't finished his sentence when a myriad of fireworks erupted in the sky. Large, small, variously colored and shaped, the beauty of the event managed to overwhelm even the sun peeking from the clouds. "Want to make bets on who'll win the tournament?" Noom offered when the ship began to slowly descend. "I'd guess the Celestial. Our boys have arms growing out of all the wrong places. Plus, without Plinto or Anastaria, their chances will be zero." "Astrum," I blurted out the first thing that came to mind. "They might be able to compete. Do you have any idea what the reward is?" "Huh? Everyone knows that. Whoever wins gets the Tomb of the Creator."
Ugh. I meant the original status, not the tomb. As in, all the loot they find in it will be really sweet or something. Mayan, are you all right? Mayan, you're..."
The cocoon lid slid aside, releasing me. Without thinking long, I pushed the external exit button on Stacy's capsule and, while the system got her ready for exit, dialed the corporation on the phone. "Put me in touch with the innovations department." The next half hour was full of unpleasant discoveries. The top prize in the tournament had been kept in complete secret. No one knew about it up until the last moment. It had been Stacy's dad's idea to offer the original status as a prize. He personally lobbied the corporation on this issue, arguing that this was even
necessary in order to limit the influence that one player has on inter-clan relations.
As James explained, the corporation immediately agreed with this perspective. Everything that pertains to a single player can easily remain his. Ultimita, the chess set, his unique race. These are all toys for a single player. But as soon as the interests of a clan comes up, there should be some mechanism for doubling certain features. Otherwise, the player with the bonus can begin to extort other clans. By way of example, Ekular brought up my sale of the Tears of Harishes and the tickets to the Dark Forest as vivid examples of virtual extortion. As a result, one of the tournament rewards was set as the original status for the Tomb of the Creator. You can't leave such a lever over others in the hands of just one player. However, James tried to cheer us up, too, explaining that I could still win the tournament and thereby retain the status. Or rather, I would retain it in any case, but this way I would prevent anyone else from getting it. That would be entirely within the spirit of the game. We ended up having to catch Ekular in the game. The tournament's opening ceremony was at its peak, and he played one of its main roles. Sponsor, organizer, participant, Killer reveled in the general attention to his person, and we were forced to wait for him for a very long time. At last, Ekular deigned to answer us.
"I don't understand what you're so upset about. In the game, everything has to follow the game rules. This decision has been completely approved by the corporation's ethics committee, so we have no other choice but to accept it and move forward. Prove that you're the only one worthy of this status. Mayan, it's in your hands. Shadows are officially allowed to participate."
"That's my tomb!" I yelled, enraged.
"This isn't some toy that you can have all to yourself," Ekular cut me off tersely. "Mayan, you're starting to repeat yourself, so I'm going to go. Again, the decision was made with the corporation's approval, and all we have to do is abide by it."
"Signing off?"
"Stacy, this is a setup."
I looked at the girl with shock.
"They stole the tomb."
"It's not as simple as it seems, I'm sure."
Judging by her tone, Stacy was trying to persuade herself more than me.
"Dad would have never done this if there was even one way to resist. It's not as simple as..."
"Stacy, I really couldn't give a fig for what your dad decided with the corporation," I told her in a cold voice. Everything inside of me was in an uproar, but it would have been dumb to go off on the girl. It wasn't her fault that her father turned out to be a complete bastard.
"I won't let them seal that dungeon. The tomb will be completed, and it'll be completed by my clan. And that's that."
"Dan,"
Stacy sighed deeply, shaking her head,
"we don't have the resources to interfere with them. They'll lock us in a respawn point and won't let us out until the winner completes the dungeon. By the time that the Guardians get involved, they will have already... It's hopeless. We could have given it a shot if you still had your blink ability, but in the current situation, the probability that we can even get to the tomb is incredibly small.
Small doesn't mean non-existent. An epiphany suddenly engulfed me. A fairly rare occurrence lately, but just the thing I needed right now, when all visible paths to a solution had been cut off. Not a question. We'll look for another way. Like real heroes. Handing Stacy the gas, which would now play a not insignificant role in my plan, I didn't bother revealing my hand to my wife. First, I'd need to weigh everything and consider it carefully. The stunned siren ran off to Noom's workshop to see this wonder of Barleona technology with her own eyes, while yet another mind-numbing idea formed in my head. I'm actually afraid to imagine what the third one will be. Hey, Plinto! I got an amulet and began to bring my genius to life. I need a partner for the 2-versus-2 arena. We're going to...
Man, where the hell are you?
As soon as Plinto understood who was calling, a wild yell burst from the amulet.
We have a labyrinth scheduled in 10 minutes. Get your butt over to the tilt yard this instant. Call yourself a raid leader. Move it. We'll get disqualified.
Viltrius, I need a map of the tournament, I yelled, dashing headlong out of Altamita. In my rush, I forgot that the amulet was still activated in my hand, and so for a little while I was cheered on by Plinto's motivational words about me, Stacy, the game, and the entire world as a whole. Some of the expressions were so amusing that I couldn't help but laugh. It's a good thing that the rogue couldn't see me, as that would have only added fuel to the fire. I suppose it's time to get used to playing with a standard character. I had gotten so used to blinking everywhere lately that I hardly paid attention to the time it took to travel anymore. What really amused me as I ran from the castle to the tilt yard were the Malabarian and Cartossian players trying to get in my way and hinder me in various ways. At first, I tried to run around them, but when I couldn't shift my weight and passed right through a group of orcs from some clan I'd never heard of, I stopped caring and ran straight. PvP was disabled, and anyone who wanted to pick up the loot from my body could take a rest. Come back and try tomorrow, kids.
Where?
I yelled from afar, seeing Ansenica. The shadow players were standing in a heap to the side of the tilt yard entrance, protected by 2 chains of security. Considering that the guards had their backs to them, the security was for my warriors, protecting them from their hostile surroundings. At first, I thought this surprising, since players couldn't be hurt, and yet the vegetables and stones littering the ground in the vicinity suggested that the local NPCs were still playing their traditional roles. The roles of those who loathed everything about shadow. And Seneca waved her hand in the direction of an enormous, colorful tent positioned close to the entrance, so I adjusted my course and literally came flying into the tent, slamming against an enormous guard.
"The Shadow Raid is present and accounted for," sounded Plinto's voice as I tried to untangle myself from the armor of an enormous orc guard. All I had to do was curse the developers for turning the Cartus guards into metal monsters. How did the designers decide that warriors decked out in spikes would be comfortable fighting? Or even just stand next to others? Let's assume that the Barleona physics engine lets the spikes of 2 adjacent guards clip through each other. Okay, but I'm no NPC. I am strictly bound by my physical interactions with the world around me, in which the guards' spikes are like thorns that catch everything that's not well placed, at standstill or running.
Plinto handed a piece of paper to an important-looking, gaunt NPC in a dressy waistcoat from the time of Michelangelo or Leonardo da Vinci. This official even had a large hat with a long, voluminous feather that brushed up against the tent's ceiling, completing his image. The image of a creature that hated the entire world. With unconcealed revulsion, the official accepted the document with two fingertips and instantly dropped it onto a massive desk cluttered with similar papers.
"Shadow," he seethed through his teeth. "Registration confirmed. The labyrinth will begin in 3 minutes. May you perish in it."
"We need to register for the arena, too," I managed to yell, untangling myself from the orc. Rushing over to the stand with the blank forms, I found the one for the arena, paid the entry fee, entered my name and Plinto's, and handed it to the official, who grimaced even further.
"Arena registration is closed," he began,
but there was no stopping me. I didn't need the hate of this shrimp, who the corporation would erase from the game's memory after the tournament. I needed the hate of the players, and only serious, hardcore hate. "Is that an official rejection?" I hiked an eyebrow expressively.
"The second participant hasn't yet confirmed his participation, so you can't file a registration."
"All right, I confirm it."
Plinto looked at me attentively.
"Man, the hell do you need the arena for? We don't have any tactics worked out, and we've never even fought together. A shaman and a rogue are by default mincemeat for, say, a paladin and a death knight, so..."
"Registered. Duo number 1,032,669.
The official even smiled when he heard Plinto's words. An entrance fee was withdrawn from my account, forcing me to whistle. 1,000 gold. Considering the number of participants, the corporation had just made a cool billion out of thin air. I want to make money like that, too.
"Come on,"
Plinto literally pulled me toward the exit.
"The labyrinth starts in a minute. We need to get ready."
Chapter 12. The Arena.
"All right, surprise me. What the hell do you need the arena for?"
Plinto tore himself away from a mug of stat-restoring liquid and leaned back in his armchair. The tavern that had been erected near the tilt yard was full of people, despite the fact that it actually consisted of several hundred virtual instances of its main hall to accommodate the insane number of guests. We went through the labyrinth like hot knives through butter. The designers hadn't bothered to come up with anything fancy for the qualifying stage of this competition, limiting themselves to two bosses with three attacks that we knew ahead of time. It still remained a mystery to me why they called it a labyrinth, even though it was no more than a straight hallway. There were no turns, no dead ends, nor any cozy out-of-the-way corners to take a nap. Two rooms, two bosses, and 1 hour. This was how long each competitor had to complete the qualifying stage. We managed in 23 minutes, losing only two players along the way. The bosses here were level 200, so whenever they cast AoE attacks, the low-level players had to be extra careful. Effectively, Plinto and I did the fighting, helped along by Anseneca and Endiga. The rest of our shadow party hadn't yet reached level 150, and the bosses were off-limits to them. To Plinto's chagrin, Lori wasn't there. She was practicing a new song with her band, wishing to rip the other competitors to shreds as early as the qualifying phase of the Battle of the Bards. It was an unspoken rule that once the competition ended, the participants headed to the nearest tavern to celebrate. It's barely worth mentioning that the prices here were astronomical, while the crowd of players looking for a free drink was impassable in all 100 virtual instances of this place. Individual characters and even tables would pop in and out of existence in the tavern, but the general number of players remained about the same. The tournament competitors had started at the same time, so within a few minutes a mob of winners, vanquishers of two angry bosses, a two-horned rhinoceros and a slug, rushed into the tavern. The celestial players had been the first to complete the qualifying labyrinth, leaving the tilt yard a mere 3 minutes and 40 seconds after they'd entered it. The best time had been set very high. The results of the qualifying round didn't affect later standings, but Bayan clearly wanted to signal that his fighters had no equals at the tournament. Astrum had come in second with just over 5 minutes, while Phoenix wasn't even among the top three. "Why?" I placed my glass on the tray that the waiter was carrying among the players and turned to face the rogue. "I want to win." "Not much of an argument," Plinto smirked, but then grew serious. "It took me way too long to earn my bloodied title to see it evaporate in the arena. Do you think that anyone will be in fear or awe of me if I lose against two pimple-faced students? I may as well delete myself after something like that. So, please, be so kind as to explain the true reason for your wish to become mincemeat."
"The arena, as I understand it, scales everyone to level 100.
I paused, waiting for Plinto's nod, before continuing. "Which means that you can't use any heavy artillery in it."
"That's exactly why we'll be mincemeat," Plinto interrupted. "All of my heavy artillery kicks in at level 150. The entire arsenal I've been playing with for the last few years consists of level 200 powers. Now I won't have them, and I'll be no different from a newbie who's just clambered into the capsule. So what's the point?"
"You see..." I made a dramatic pause, evoking a frown of displeasure from the rogue, and then went on. "I want to piss off anyone I can. I'll throw the gauntlet into Bayan's face, at his fighters, at Ekular, Calatea, whoever. I want to make it so that every arena participant only wants a chance to fight us."
"Let's say I know how to make that happen."
Little mad devils flared up into Plinto's eyes, the same ones that all of Malabar had learned to fear. Yet again he grew serious.
"Only that doesn't explain how you plan on turning two meat popsicles into fighters. I'll remind you again, you're a shaman, and I'm a rogue."
"When did I say I'd fight in the arena as a shaman?" I raised an eyebrow inquisitively. "And I never said that I need you as a level 100 rogue. That really would be stupid, to fight as such an odd combination."
"In that case, how..."
Plinto began, but here his face lit up with the comprehension of my greater idea. "I'm only a level 16 dragon," I went on in an innocent tone, resurrecting the mad devils in Plinto's eyes. Unnoticed by those around us, and perhaps even by himself, Plinto transformed into his vampire form. The little demons dissolved in the general redness of his eyes. Though the tavern was still full of people, an empty space formed around. The shadow players that had been sitting beside us remembered
that they had urgent business to attend to. The new players, for some reason, didn't rush to take their vacant seats, or if they phased in from another instance of the tavern, they quickly understood that the beer was colder in another instance. The aura of fear emanating from the high vampire worked perfectly. "I'm terrified,"